Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Good morning, and welcome to AM 1230 WFAS. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We got a big show for you today. Got a bunch of guests talking about a little game that they are playing today down in Nolens in preparation for Fat Tuesday. It's a big party for Fat Tuesday is what's going on, and we got a big day. Big day ahead. Bruce, how's your week been, buddy? Are you ready
for today? I'm sucking on my throat lozenges as we speak. Well, the South Lakes High School varsity wrestling team came up a little short. We had kind of the round from hell. We were in first place most of the tournament, ended up in a close second. We'll probably win it next year. But it's my last year of coaching wrestling in high school. I'll be involved, but I'll have my voice every weekend. And I apologize for this voice, but you know what? We're going to have a lot of great voices on the air today. I'll be asking a lot of questions. We'll be listening to Clark Judge. He's going to be on. We're going to be listening to Russ, my buddy from Connecticut, Russell Baxter, who is phenomenal. He's going to be calling in around 11. And we've got some other people that are going to be calling in. And also, you can call in to 240-317-7294. If you want to talk about anything Super Bowl related, Hall of Fame related, or drug related. There's a lot of that going around this week, too. A lot of stuff happening. A lot of A-Rod. Can A-Rod do anything else besides collect a $25 million paycheck every year? Now, there's a lot of speculation saying they're going to release him eventually. If they do that, they still got to pay him. It's guaranteed salary.
Yeah.
$25 million a year. Don't you keep him as a pinch hitter and just make him suffer on your bench?
You kind of have to. Yeah. You know? He hasn't been the defensive player that they brought him in to be anyways. They pulled him during the playoffs last year, and he was only hitting DH. He was hitting one or two times a game. He was pinch hitting. So he's not the player that he has been. I know that they came out and said he was hurt or whatever during the postseason, but I feel like that's more of an excuse for A-Rod and why you have such an expensive person pinch hitting for you once a game. I mean, A-Rod was not the A-Rod that New York brought him in this past year.
No, absolutely. And you know what, Roy? Here's what I noticed about him and the Yankees. And as everybody knows, I picked the Yankees to win the East at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. And then Baltimore had a phenomenal season for a team that spent, about a quarter of the money, mm-hmm. a fifth of the money that the Yankees do. Yankees still have the biggest payroll in baseball that I'm aware of. I don't think Toronto has caught them yet, but Toronto's damn close now.
Angels are up there. Yep. The Dodgers are up there.
Well, the Dodgers got the money.
And the Red Sox were up there, but the Dodgers kind of
did you see the deal that the Dodgers just signed? $7 billion over 10 years or something?
TV deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, that's basically
that's how the
TV
Yankees make their money.
Yeah, it's basically the TV deal that the previous owners tried to get done, and baseball wouldn't let them get done. So that's pretty funny.
Well, it's exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA. Knicks still doing it.
Yeah.
The Knicks are still doing it. Brooklyn's still, they're playing some ball. Evidently, the move that was made in Brooklyn, to let their head coach go early in the season is paying off for him. It's paying off for him.
Well, it's the Knicks. The Nets started out great with Avery Johnson, and then they went on that slide.
Boy, they lost seven in a row.
Yeah,
or something.
And they were 13-13, I believe, when they fired Johnson, which turned out to be a great thing.
The Nets seemed to work out.
The Nets are back. I mean, they're a good team.
John Mara is in the spotlight again. Has John Mara got a big mouth or what? I'm sorry, I don't like you. You know that. I love Rooney. I watched Girl with a Dragon Tattoo again the other day. That is a great movie. If you've never seen it, you got to see that movie. It's got James Bond in it. You know, the guy that plays James Bond now. And I'm going to tell you right now, what's your problem? You know, you own the damn, you're the operating partner mm-hmm. of the New York Giants. Keep your mouth shut. You know, why do you got to say stuff? Now he's talking about Rex. You know what's going to happen? He's going to make people feel sorry for Rex Ryan, who shouldn't even have a head coaching job right now. Well, you know what? I'm now siding with Rex in this one because
I don't know if you can get rid of Rex just yet.
No, not yet. In After reality, this year.
Right, right.
If they go 5-11, 6-10 this year, he's gone.
I agree. But you have to look at the big picture when you're thinking about a coach. This past year, did they take a step back? Absolutely. But who did they really have on their team? Darrell Revis got hurt, torn ACL. Their big-time receiver, Santonio Holmes, got hurt. You have, you know, Mark Sanchez.
Well, they had free agency hurt him, too.
Yeah, and Mark Sanchez, he is not the best quarterback in the league. Everybody knows that. He's not. I'm not going to say that
he's never had better than an 84.9 rating, I don't think.
But when you take away his weapons, you really start to see terrible, terrible things out of Mark Sanchez.
Well, you know what? In the first 2 years Mark was in the league,
AFC Championship,
they had a great team, though. Yeah. They had a great defense. They had a great offensive line. They had great running backs. I mean, they played as a team, but that wasn't Rex's team.
But well,
it became Rex's team. Now, I think the second year, a lot of Rex in that.
Mm-hmm. But and they went back in the AFC Championship.
But it wasn't Kavanaugh, but their offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, he did a great job with that offense.
Well, they had LT healthy. That
yes,
was the big
did.
Thing there.
Yes, they did.
Sean Green, he's a good running back. I don't know if
he's a north and south guy. He's a north and south guy, but you know what? He'll pound you.
Mm-hmm. I heard in an interview with the former GM of the Jets on one of the radio stations this week, and they had him on, and they were asking him about the Tebow hire.
Right.
And he said that he talked about the lack of running game, and he said that, heck, we can bring in Tebow to run that. We used to have Brad Smith, who was a fourth-round pick, who ran that Wildcat with us. Tebow could fill that as well. And we needed a backup quarterback because we had Mark Brunell. So he basically said all the things that we said all year and why they should have Tebow, why it was a good hire. It just didn't end up playing out for him.
Yeah. Which I'm still trying to figure out what was the point in Tebow going to New York. That was it. You said to me, and I looked at the article you told me to read.
Yeah.
And that article, absolutely, it was kind of his agent's idea. Mm-hmm. It was Tebow's agent. He talked him into it. You know, yeah, if it worked out there, that could have been a big payday for Tebow.
Yeah.
But obviously, he's not happy. Jets aren't happy. They haven't released him yet.
I don't know if they really will. They're looking for a trade right now.
I don't think they're going to get what they need.
They're not going to get a trade
out
of it.
They need at least a fifth-round draft choice to make it worthwhile.
But I still think there is a place in the
Unless
NFL.
They get a running back like the Redskins had.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that, too. Robert Griffin III won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he did.
You know, ended up showing up at the little party they throw for mm-hmm. it. It's funny. I was watching LaDainian Tomlinson this morning early on NFL Network. And he was saying, you know, now they've got like a party for this Rookie of the Year award in New York and all. It's actually in New Orleans. And Robert Griffin made the trip yesterday to New Orleans, even though he's rehabbing his knee.
Yeah.
Just had ACL and LCL surgery. And he looked pretty good. I mean, he looked mm-hmm. like he was getting around okay. And the thing that LaDainian said was, you know how I found out that I won Rookie of the Year? And he said, I was lifting weights with my strength coach in San Diego when they told me. We got a caller. Who we got on the line here?
You got Clark Judge calling, Bruce.
Right. Clark, it's great to hear from you. We got CBS's Clark Judge, the number one guy, in my opinion, on NFL football anywhere. Clark, thanks for calling in. Now you had a great time. Now, you're in New Orleans, correct?
I am.
What's the weather like? Like it matters.
Yeah, they should be playing this one outdoors, Bruce. It looks like it's be mid-60s, beautiful sunlit day, no wind whatsoever, gorgeous day for a game.
You know, the greatest thing about New Orleans is unless you aren't healthy, you can almost walk to the dome from all of the downtown hotel locations. You're no more than 12 blocks away, usually.
Great, Bruce, the greatest thing about New Orleans is the food.
Yeah.
You've been to Shea Paul yet?
You're right. You're right. No, I haven't. You're right about that with the venues, though. Everything's within walking distance. The team hotels are within walking distance. That's why it's a great place to be. I hear a lot of reporters saying, hey, listen, they should hold it here every year. But I know the people in Indianapolis wouldn't like to hear that. Last year's Super Bowl was great, too. Indianapolis just is a smaller venue, smaller city, but it did a terrific job hosting Super Bowl. Mm. Nice to have it back here in New Orleans. I think people missed it.
Yeah.
Clark, can I get you to hold for 1 minute? We got to go to a break, but I'm going to have you on the whole second segment minimum. We got Clark Judge with CBS, number one guy. He's actually a New York guy, lives in New York City, and he's in New Orleans, and we got a lot of stuff to go over with him.
The ultimate in personal jewelry service at Twins Jewelers. Customers become friends, and everyone gets treated like family with locations in Yonkers and Pleasantville.
We'll be back in a minute on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back in a minute on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
On Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BH Sports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I've got Clark Judge. CBS is Clark Judge, number one NFL guy in my opinion. Clark, I got to tell you something. You're the only guy I really like to kind of hang with on Twitter during an event that lasts longer than an hour. You know, because you pay attention to the game. And that's the biggest thing. Now, listen, you were also at an event this week, the Hall of Fame voting. And you,
that's right.
Now, you have a vote, correct?
Yes, I do.
God, how do you get a vote, Clark? You just have to be, like, really important. I mean, that sounded like a pretty – how long did it last? Like 8-9 hours?
It lasted 8 hours, 20 minutes. It was interminable. But there were a lot of – long and I think very worthwhile conversations, mostly around Art Modell and Bill Parcells.
Let's do this. Let's talk about the guys that got in first. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to throw the name out. You give me your take on the guy, okay? And then we'll talk about the guys that did not get in, okay? Larry Allen, a monster guy.
He was a slam dunk to me. He was one of the two sort of certainties in this process. I looked at him and his record, and I saw him play. Certainly when I covered the 49ers, you saw the Cowboys all the time, and you recognize that Larry Allen was a guy that was really difficult to solve for anybody. And I'd hear talk to defensive linemen on the 49ers, and they always told me how tough it was to try to handle him. And I watched him over the years and just thought, there's a guy who clearly distinguishes himself as somebody who's very special. I think he was a two-time all-decade choice, which makes him very special. So that was a no-brainer to me.
You know, Larry Allen, I remember when he was with the Cowboys, of course, being growing up a Redskin fan, you got to give due to the guys that are your enemies. But he was one of the first guys that was above 300 pounds that was super athletic. He was a lot like Jonathan Ogden, who also got in from the Baltimore Ravens. Jonathan Ogden's a local D.C. kid, played at Spingarn High School or Eastern High School downtown Washington. And then, you know, they made him their first pick. Ozzie Newsome did way back 1 year. And I got to tell you, you know, I mean, both of those guys were all world. And I'm glad they both got in this year. Larry Allen played, though, with some really good offensive linemen. He played with Nate Newton. He played with Mark Stepnoski. He played with a couple of other guys whose names escape me, but I remember 1 year, the Dallas Cowboys. Do you remember the trade? Of course you do. With Minnesota, when Herschel Walker went there,
they got all
of those picks. That was a trade, in my opinion, that should have never been allowed to happen. But that trade made me a lot of money because I took three groups from Dallas to the Super Bowl because of that trade. What do you think about that trade, looking back?
Well, it's a trade that made the Cowboys. They'd also made Jimmy Johnson, turned him from a coach to this Super Bowl champion. They restocked themselves with that trade. It's considered the most lopsided trade in the NFL history. You know, you hear a lot of people talk today about, oh, is this a bad deal? Is that a bad deal? They always end up comparing it with a Herschel Walker deal because Herschel Walker goes to Minnesota. Mike Lynn got him because he thought he could put him over the top, but he ended up giving up way, way too much. But it might have been a different story if the Cowboys didn't know what they were doing. They turned those draft picks into terrific ball players, and some of them, you know, Pro Bowl and All-Pro players, and basically made that team the team that it was, and really was the best team in the early to mid-1990s. They and the 49ers had colossal battles, but the Cowboys restocked themselves through the draft and those draft picks mm-hmm. that they got from the Minnesota Vikings and the Herschel Walker deal.
That was awesome. So anyway, let's talk about Jonathan Ogden, since we already started talking about him. What did you think about Jonathan, and how easy was the vote? I didn't see the results of the voting. Maybe we don't get to see them, but you tell me how that worked out.
Well, you don't get to see them, and neither do we. We simply fill out ballots and hand it to them, and they tell us, okay, this is the group that made it to the final 10. This is the group that made it to the final 7. So Ogden was the other guy. I mentioned there were two people who I thought were certainties. He was the other one. He probably was the most certain choice of all the 17 people who are up for selection. And, again, you look at his record. In fact, I stood up and said something about him, which was essentially the day before they drafted him in 1996 and made him the first draft pick of the Ravens in Ravens history. Art Modell then met with Ozzie Newsome and said to him, what are we looking at here? He said, I think we're looking at this tackle from UCLA, and he's going to be good. And Modell said, how good will he be? He goes, well, he'll be a starter every year he's here. And he said he should be a starter for 10 years. Well, he was a starter for 12. And Art said, anything else? He goes, yeah, I think he's going to be a Pro Bowl player every year he's here, too. Well, he was a Pro Bowl player in all the seasons that he played left tackle, which was 11. So he was a Pro Bowl player every year that he was a left tackle. And Art said, anything else he gets? Yeah, he's a certainty for the Hall of Fame. I think he's a certain Hall of Fame choice. So Ozzie was 3-for-3 on this one.
Ozzie Newsome, in my opinion, is the best general manager in football. He's done such a great job there. I mean, you know, we're going to talk Super Bowl a little bit later. Let me give you another guy. This is my favorite guy, as you know, Curly Culp. Now, I don't know if you're old enough to remember him, but I was in junior high school when Curly Culp was wrestling at Arizona State University. And I remember Curly because a lifeguard at my pool in the summer went to ASU. And all he could talk about was Curly Culp, Curly Culp. Tell me about Curly and what you thought about him.
Well, he was one of the two seniors who was up for selection, and he was presented by Rick Gosnell of the Dallas Morning News, who did a terrific job. But, yeah, I was old enough to see Curly Culp, and I remember him very well, playing with Kansas City and then later with Houston. A dominant player and really a dominant nose tackle. When he went to Houston, they changed their defense to a 3-4 to accommodate Curly Culp and made all the difference in the world. Bum Phillips loved working with this guy, and it made, as I said, made the Houston Oilers what they were defensively. And they were a pretty bad club before he got there, and they became a pretty good club while he was there. And the reason Kansas City got rid of him was because he'd signed a contract with the World League, and the World League was an upstart league in the 70s. And so Hank Stram wanted to get something for him before he left, so he dealt him to Houston. He decided to play and stuck in the league and turned out to be a great player and a guy who really considered one of the best tackles and maybe the best nose tackle of all time. And I know I say that and some people go, what about this guy, what about this guy? If you weren't old enough to see Curly Culp, it doesn't really make any difference. But if you were, you'd notice the difference he had on that team, and I'm talking about Houston, the difference he could make in a game. There were some people who were quoted as saying, essentially, this guy was unblockable. He was a great, very strong, strong guy, great pass rusher, but also a great run defender, too. He could take on blockers. So I'm glad to see he's in there. He's been ignored for far too long. It was the first time he got in that room, and I'm glad he got it.
You know, and just to say a little something about Curly Culp, Hank Stram is one. You know, Hank Stram doesn't get a whole lot of credit sometimes, but he was pretty innovative. And when they went to a 3-4 that year and put Culp in the middle, he used to take on two, sometimes three blockers because he was so agile and so athletic. He was only like 6'1", about 260, but he was impossible to block. And remember who was behind him? Willie Lanier. Guys like that were running
Bobby
free.
Bell.
Oh, God. Bobby Bell was a wrestler, too. All these guys were phenomenal players.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because Willie Lanier gets lost in the shuffle, too. I hear people talking about, you know, when Ray Lewis announces retirement, people say he's the greatest middle linebacker of all time. They're, you know, the greatest middle linebacker. Well, if you weren't old enough to see some of these other guys, they get forgotten. You say, listen, Ray Lewis is on a short list. He's a great middle linebacker, no question about it. But Dick Butkus was a monster, and Willie Lanier was too. And people forget about how good Willie Lanier was. But for those of us old enough to see him, you remember, I don't need an ESPN tape or a highlight film to remember how good he was. I saw him play, and I saw Butkus play too. And so that's why I'm glad that we have the seniors to get in each year because they're guys that kind of got lost in the shuffle and they've been buried in the avalanche of players trying to get in, modern-day players trying to get in. So a guy like Willie Lanier, you know, certainly he got in when he was supposed to, but Somebody like Curly Culp, Dave Robinson's the other senior got in today. Well, yesterday, I mean. It's good to see them get in because they've been forgotten for far too long.
Yeah, what I remember about Dave Robinson, we'll go to him now, Clark. What I remember about Dave Robinson is he was a member of those Packer teams. So he had a lot of really good, he had like guys behind him, pretty sure like Willie Wood, you know, that could play ball. He had great lines. He had Nitschke. And Dave was a little younger than those. I remember he was, wasn't he Rookie of the Year 1 year?
I think he was, yeah, but I don't recall that. Might have been Defensive Rookie of the Year. I don't recall
he
that.
He was a tall guy. He was about 6'3", 6'4", maybe even 6'5", about 250, 245, and he could run the field. How did that vote go, did you think? Did you hear anything about it? Because he got in?
Yeah, Oh, sure. You listen to the presentation, then you vote on it. But the thing I remember about him was a great pass defender. He wasn't asked to rush the passer. He's actually asked to play, you know, pass receivers and drop into coverage. And I remember the long arms he had because I grew up a Baltimore Colts fan and still am a Baltimore Colts fan.
That's right.
And it was so tough for quarterbacks to drop balls over his arms. I mean, he's just a long arm guy and very, very agile and quick and could go sideline to sideline. But to me, it was a key part of a very, very good defense. As pointed out, those Packer teams were as much, if not more, about defense than they were about offense. We talk about Taylor Horn and Star, Dowler, guys like that. But on defense, you mentioned Willie Wood, Herb Adderley, Nitschke, as you mentioned, and Dave Robinson. They were loaded on that side of the ball, and they could stop the run, they could stop the pass, and he was very important to them in their coverage of tight ends like John Mackey or Mike Ditka. And it was pointed out the number of catches they had before he got there, and number of catches they had afterwards, and Mackey was, in my mind, one of the best, if not the best, tight end of all time. And, yeah, he struggled a little bit against Green Bay just because of Dave Robinson. Again, I said that those long arms made it very difficult to get the ball past him. And hallelujah, they finally in because he deserved it.
Well, certainly people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s will remember him. Chris Carter, a guy that Buddy Ryan let go because all he did was score touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the best line of all time for Buddy Ryan. Talk to me about Chris Carter. What did you like the most about Chris?
Well, what you talk about, touchdowns, 130 touchdowns in his career. That number really jumps out at you. It's funny because each year three receivers kept coming up, Tim Brown, Chris Carter, and Andre Reed, and the room's been divided on the three. And at some point we figured the logjam's got to break, and that was pointed out this year. We've got to get one of these guys in there. Otherwise, Marvin Harrison's coming up next year, and he's going to jump the queue, and he'll go to the front of the line.
Right.
And maybe these guys just sort of get forgotten, much like the Dave Robinson and the Curly Culps of the world. So it came down, honestly, to Andre Reed and Chris Carter. And I'm more of an Andre Reed fan, to be honest with you. I mean, I know Chris Carter had a ton of touchdowns and a lot of catches, but I saw Andre Reed make big catches in big games. He didn't play indoors. He played outside. And it's funny because people think, oh, he played with a pass offense. Actually, they ran the ball 51% of the time up in Buffalo. And when you got there in November, December, before global warming came into effect, I mean, it was brutal. It was brutal. I mean,
beer was freezing.
Weather conditions. Yeah, and Andre Reed made big catches,
seriously.
And he, to me, was a real weapon for them. And without Andre Reed, I don't think you would have had the Buffalo Bills going to four straight Super Bowls.
Yeah.
That said, Chris Carter made a lot of catches. He scored a lot of touchdowns. Now, he had a low average yards per catch. I think it was 12.6, but that was brought up, but it didn't seem to be a factor. Someone had to get in. It came down to Reed and Carter, and in the end, Carter got in, and he is deserving.
I'm trying to remember who the quarterback was in Philly when Carter spent most of his years there.
Ooh.
It wasn't Jaworski because he was earlier. But they weren't much of a threat throwing down the field. I can remember that. And I think Mike Quick was there, too, from NC State. He's a North Carolina guy. Hey, can you stick around here just for a few more minutes? We'll talk about Warren Sapp because I'm divided on Sapp. But everything I read about Sapp, everybody thinks he's phenomenal. We're going to be back with Clark Judge here in America. Clark, thanks so much for coming on. We'll be back with Clark, and we'll talk about Warren Sapp and the Super Bowl on AM 1230 WFAS.
Your hair, do you think it's going to make him change?
I'm just a boy with a blue haircut, and that's a pretty nice haircut. Charge it like a puzzle, hit me wearing muzzles.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. We got Clark Judge with CBS.com. CBS, in my opinion, the top guy to go to in the NFL today. Probably knows more about the NFL than the NFL knows about themselves. Clark, we're talking about the Hall of Fame voting yesterday. We're down to Warren Sapp. Talk to me about Sapp. You know, he got in a little trouble this year with something he said on ESPN or something that was going on. But he definitely had a phenomenal career. What did you think about Sapp?
Well, I think he's better on the football field than he is on TV. Let's put it that way. He gets in trouble with a lot of stuff he says. But that wasn't what was up for a vote. What was up for a vote was what he did on the football field. And I had some, you know, feelings about him, and I sort of am with you. I was a little bit lukewarm about him. I thought he was going to get in sooner or later. I wasn't sure I wanted to make him a first ballot Hall of Famer. But the case that was presented by Ira Kaufman of the Tampa Tribune was really well done, and I think it was very compelling. Talked about him as a tough run defender, an outstanding pass rusher, a guy that had a terrific career in Tampa and then sort of resurrected his career for 1 year in Oakland, even though he didn't play all that well on a bad Oakland team. But pretty consistent throughout his career. The people who lined up that I represented who spoke on his behalf were impressive. And I think the membership looked at it and just said, at some point he's getting in. He plays a position, defensive tackle, that he dominated. I mean, he really did dominate when he played. So if he's going to go in sooner or later, why not make it sooner? And it's interesting that there was a presentation early about Rick Goslin about how there are so few defensive players in regards to offensive players, and it's 2-1 offensive players over defensive players. And I think this time, you know, we cleared some of that. We got Sapp in, you know, Curly Culp got in, Dave Robinson got in. I think that made some of the membership feel better about trying to balance this thing out. But Sapp certainly was a dominant player when he was involved, and I think that really swung the case in his behalf.
And, you know, those guys you spoke of definitely needed to get in. And I was so sad.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the guy everybody knows, Bill Parcells. Now, you either love him or you hate him, or if you're like me and you, you're in between. It's not the kind of guy you're going to want to go on vacation with, but if you want to sit down and talk football and you're willing to listen, Parcells pretty much knows what's going on. Isn't he like the only coach in NFL history to have gone to the playoffs with four teams? I think he's the only guy.
He went four teams. Yeah,
that's unbelievable. Now, that is hard to do. I mean, when you think
and he went to three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. Now, of course, Joe Gibbs won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks, which makes Joe Gibbs, to me, in my estimation, one of the best, if not the best, modern day coach. I mean, what he did was remarkable in Washington. But you look at Parcells' record. Yeah, people can say, hey, he was 32-32 in New England. He was 34-30 in Dallas. That's not all that impressive. But then you start to dissect and look at the impact he had on the game, and he did put four organizations back on their feet. He also is responsible for Bill Belichick, Tom Coughlin, if you want to say Sean Payton, and you add those together with him, those are 10 Super Bowl appearances and 8 Lombardi trophies. That's impressive.
Yep.
So you can't write the history of the league without the guy. Do I have feelings about him? Yeah. I mean, did I think he was a jerk? I did. Did I think he was a bully? Absolutely. But I overcame all those and said he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because you really cannot write the history of this league without this guy and the impact he had. I don't care what kind of a guy he is. That's not a factor. The impact he had on the game was enormous. In the end, that's what made up my mind. I voted for him last year. I voted for him again this year, and I'm glad I did.
Well, you know, Belichick, to me, is Parcells, too, with media and press conferences. As a matter of fact, at least Parcells could do stand-up comedy. Belichick, he doesn't even have that going for him. And you know what? Bill said some things to me, you know, when I would watch him on TV, that made a hell of a lot of sense. But at the same time, like we said, and I think that's the thing about you and I, Clark, we think a little bit alike about these guys. He's not going to be invited to too many parties. But I'm glad he got in. We don't have to talk about him anymore for sure. Let me ask you this, since we're talking about Hall of Fame, and we're going to go to the Super Bowl right after that, and I want your thoughts on that, because you're there, buddy, in the Big Easy. I'm not. Who did you think should have gotten in that didn't?
Well, there's several.
Number one, number two.
I'd say number one, probably Strahan. I mean, Strahan's going to get in. I mean, people get so hung up on he didn't get in. Well, he's going to get in. I mean, he'll probably get in next year.
Yeah.
But I thought Strahan, Aeneas Williams is a guy who's going to get in, I think, at some point. Terrific cornerback who doesn't get near the attention because he spent a lot of his career with a bad organization, and that was the Arizona Cardinals. But then once he goes to St. Louis, he became a sort of a household name for people 10 years ago. Again, people today might go, Aeneas Williams, not really sure who he is. He was as good a defensive back, a cornerback, as a Champ Bailey, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Jerome Bettis. Jerome Bettis, at some point, I think, is going to get in. Now, it's been a while for him, but he's knocking on the door. I think the next year, 2 years, I think Jerome Bettis is probably going to kick it in.
Yeah, and he stayed with the same team. And his numbers are there. His numbers are comparable to guys that are in. So I think you're right. Plus, he was a big guy. You know, I know you've met him. I know you've interviewed him. I met him one time at a party in New Orleans several years ago. He has the biggest head I've ever seen. I would hate to have that helmet hit me because I wear an 8 hat. I'm like Boach, my buddy, with San Francisco Giants. Boach wears an 8 3/8. I wear an 8. I bet Bettis wears a 9. He is one of the biggest from the waist up. He looks like he's 300 pounds. He's got these little powerful legs. I just really liked Jerome. He was a good guy, and I enjoyed talking.
Yeah, well, so your size was mentioned yesterday, but not size of his head, basically his body, and how many yards he got as a big back, and really how unusual that was for a big back to get those many that many yards. I mean, obviously he was with two clubs, the Rams and the Steelers, made his name really with the Steelers, but he was productive throughout his career, and people want to focus on that 3.9 yards per carry. I don't care about that. He was productive. He had a long career, and some people, I think were awarding him more for longevity than anything else. All I know was he was reliable, and he was consistent, and he did it for a long period of time, and he's a big back who got a ton of yards. It just really doesn't happen anymore. You think the guys who are getting a lot of yards, you're thinking of a guy who's built more like an Adrian Peterson, a Chris Johnson, guys like that. This guy just was productive year in and year out. Plus, he was a goal line, a weapon. And as some people pointed out there yesterday, that yards per carry is affected by that because when you've got 2 yards to go and you give it to Jerome Bettis, he's only getting 2 yards, although he might be able to run for 12. He's only getting 2, and you got the ball a lot in short yards and goal line situations. And, of course, he's very reliable.
Clark, real quick, let's talk about the Super Bowl. Okay, I know you have a thought on it. Everybody's going to know who I want. I think I've already told them. My team's in it, the 49ers. My other team didn't get in. Who do you like today and why? And we're probably going to break in about 2.5-3 minutes. If you'd like to come back, I'd love to have you back just for a few minutes.
I've got to run.
Well, tell me who you like.
I'll talk on the Super Bowl.
That sounds great.
I like the Ravens, and I like the Ravens for this reason. I think they're riding an emotional tidal wave, and I think these two clubs are matched evenly on paper. I think the 49ers are the better team. Would it surprise me if the 49ers won? No, it wouldn't. I think they're a team that's very well balanced. They don't make a lot of mistakes, and I think they've got a head coach who is a very sharp in-game coach and good manager. That said, you look on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and you've got a club that's riding this wave of momentum, and they believe very strongly in themselves. You know, I look at that 4th and 29. Shouldn't happen.
Oh,
jeez. I look at that.
In San Diego.
Raheem Moore play shouldn't happen, but it did.
Right.
Tom Brady beating him in New England in an AFC championship game and shutting him out in the second half shouldn't happen, but it did. And I'm going to tell you, these guys look at themselves, and they go, it doesn't make any difference who we're playing. We believe we can win. We're not the best team this year. We're not the best. In fact, we're probably far from it, but we're the best team now. That's what they believe. Mm-hmm. And whether it's the Ray Lewis retirement, the Art Modell memory, or Joe Flacco, whatever it is, they're playing for something, and they do believe in themselves. And I see in them what I saw in the Giants a year ago. Remember the Giants a year ago were guaranteeing victories and saying, we're going to win this game, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. That was so atypical
right.
Tom Coughlin type of team.
Absolutely.
And they didn't care what they said. Because they knew. They just cared. They just said, listen, I don't care if we're playing the 85 Bears, 2000 Ravens, doesn't make any difference. We're going to win because we believe this. What's going on in the Baltimore locker room.
Yeah.
To me, the key here is protecting Flacco. If that offensive line, especially the left side of it, can protect as well as it has in the past and in the playoffs, and with the Smiths on that side, I think they're going to be successful. Flacco can step into throws. If he doesn't make mistakes, I think they're in great
Clark, shape. You might have turned me. I may be getting off this. Listen, do you play golf at all?
I do not, Bruce. Sorry.
All right.
I play tennis.
Well, you know what I was going to tell you? I've got a present for you for coming on the show the two times you've come on this year. You pick a day you want to be at the Masters in Augusta, Georgia, just to hang out. You'll be my guest. Okay?
Bruce, that's a deal. That's one of my lifelong dreams.
I've been to 27 straight. Clark Judge, CBS Sports. Thank you so much, Clark, for your insight. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you, protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back here on AM 1230, the BFAS's Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We just had Clark Judge on from CBS. You can follow him on Twitter. He is Clark Judge CBS, right? I believe that's what
he
is.
No, he's got an underscore in there.
No, there's an underscore.
Here, I'll find it for you real quick. Hey, you know, it's not like I'm not on Twitter 24/7. And listen, follow me and Roy. If you want, and only if you want information that's important.
Or stupid. Follow me.
At Bruce Hall Sports or at Sportsman Cave. That's at Bruce Hall Sports or at Sportsman Cave. Mm-hmm. We never sleep. And when we do, we're thinking sports. And listen, we're not going to bore you with everything that you read in the paper or hear on the four-letter network. We're going to give you stuff you never get. Clark Judge told me 5-6 things during that interview that I didn't know. Listen, I mean, I know a lot of stuff. I didn't know that those guys weren't around when the final voting numbers came in. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that, you know, that there was somebody that would present everybody every time. It was amazing to hear all that, and what was really amazing was to hear who's probably going to get in next year.
I'm glad you mentioned Strahan.
Strahan and Bess will get in next year.
Yeah, I was going to ask him about Strahan, whether or not...
he's an automatic. They just figured they need to get the older guys in this year.
Strahan's an older guy than
They don't have anybody that can... But they can only get 7 in a year.
I understand that. I wanted to know who, how it came down to. He talked about Tim Brown and Chris Carter... And the battle, how that divided the room.
You know, Tim Brown is really lukewarm, though.
I don't know. He's got both sides on a Super Bowl
team. He's going to get in, but he may get in late. He may be like Curly Culp.
Yeah.
Curly Culp made 2 all-decade teams, 1 all-time team as a nose tackle.
To me,
Timmy Brown's not going to be your all-time wide receiver. That's Jerry Rice.
To me, the 90s Bills are the greatest team that no one's ever really heard
of. I couldn't agree more, because I took those crazy people to Super Bowls. They are the craziest people I've ever been around.
I love Kelly. Jim Kelly comes up when people talk greatest quarterback of all time.
You'd love to party with him and his brother, Danny. His brother, Danny Kelly, is like he's a party animal.
I always throw Jim Kelly's name around whenever I'm talking greatest quarterbacks of all time, because there will never be a quarterback again.
4 Super Bowls in a row.
He didn't win one.
No, I didn't have to. He was in the game.
But he went 4 times in a row. That alone will never happen again.
Let me tell you, and a lot of that had to do with who they were playing. They played the Cowboys twice when the Cowboys were unbeatable. And they almost beat him in the second Super Bowl they played him which was in Atlanta.
Yeah, I always joke with you, if he had a kicker, he'd have 2 rings.
He'd have 1 for sure, because in Tampa I was there. Mm-hmm. That was my first Super Bowl where I took people.
But he was great. He really was.
Yes, he was. And so was Thurman Thomas. Thurman Thomas is unbelievable. And Thurman Thomas, if I'm not mistaken, is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Because he could catch the ball out of the backfield. He could run the ball. He was an amazing guy. He came out of that running back factory, Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Just like Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of guys that came out of Oklahoma State. And guess who wasn't there then? I'm 40. I'm a man. Mike Gundy was not there then. But anyway, listen.
He was not 40. He was a little boy then. Hey, he was not a man.
Let's talk Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's Super Bowl Sunday.
I'm glad Clark was on the same side as me because I was.
You know what?
I've been on the fence. I you know, every article I've
written, what I'm doing now. I'm covering. I'm going to hedge. I'm going to hedge. I'm going to take them in the teasers with all
the
points.
The four. They're getting four.
I love that. And you know what else I like? Everybody thinks this is going over. I like the under.
I like the under. I love
the
under.
Well, that's bad. Then I'm going over.
21-20. I'm thinking it's 21-20, and I think the game is won in the final seconds on a David Akers field goal.
I think both defenses are going to play better than everybody thinks. I really do.
I guess 21-20 wouldn't. No, 24. I'll go 24-23 then, because I think it's going to be a field goal.
I predicted 24-20 San Francisco early in the week. Right now, I'm going to stay with that. I'm going to take them straight up, but my teasers are going to have a Raven in front of them because I like the points.
The plus four
and I like what
ridiculous.
Clark said. Listen, think about this for a second. Joe Flacco, 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
Five wins in the playoffs in a row.
Yep.
And he's in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Kaepernick,
his
ninth game ever. What does that tell you? I think Flacco's due.
Yeah.
I really think he is. And you know, did you hear Clark? He's in New Orleans. He's seen it all week. Those guys have
I wonder if he partied with Gronk at all. Did you see those pictures?
I bet he did.
Rob Gronkowski with a broken arm just chugging back Budweiser.
Clark's a family
have you
man.
Seen it? Go to sportsmancave.com. The picture's up there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I got to go. Hey, listen, you're listening to Bruce Hall's second. Hey, you're listening to Bruce Hall's second opinion on AM 1230 WFAS. I'm talking to Roy Edwards, Roy G, people know him as, at Sports Man Cave. I'm Bruce Hall, at Bruce Hall Sports. By the way, if you really want to know what I'm going to do, call me a half hour before game time. 1-800-466-4748. I never play any big games early, and I'll tell you why. Guys go down. Guys go down in practice. I mean, anything can happen. Somebody, it's only happened a couple of times. Oh, Gronkowski's a freak.
Isn't that great?
He's a freak. Go to sportsmancave.com and look at this hairless wonder.
He shaved his chest, I guess.
He doesn't look like he's got a cast on.
He's got a black cast on his left arm, yeah.
I thought that was just some chick hanging on.
I'm pretty sure I have it.
You're listening to Bruce Hall's second opinion. I thought his black cast was some chick hanging on him.
That looks really good. A picture out of a 90s sports movie, though, right?
Isn't it pretty funny?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I'll make sure that it's up on the...
You feel like they're going to go steal a pig now.
Because now that I say that, go to sportsmancave.com. It's on our Facebook feed.
Let's talk about something real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Rookie of the Year Award. Robert Griffin III wins it. Is that a PR related?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so you don't think Russell Wilson
should
have outdone him?
No.
You don't think that Andrew Luck should have outdone him?
Andrew Luck threw 100 interceptions this year.
Okay, so Robert Griffin, how about his running back that he said he would have voted for, Alfred Morris?
Here is my order.
He changed everything.
Here's my order.
Yeah, I agree.
RG3, Russell Wilson, Alfred Morris, then Andrew Luck. Those are my four.
You know what? That's pretty accurate.
And I think Russell Wilson was a close second, but I think the first four games of the season were iffy. There were the questions. I mean, the first beginning of the season, they were talking about maybe Flynn is the guy. There was kind of that teeter, and then Wilson took off.
You know, I don't think anybody really trusted him yet.
Right.
And now, he was a
he
rookie.
He had a great season.
Well, he lost to Arizona first game. Wasn't in Arizona?
I mean, he had a great season, but...
Arizona struggled a bit.
He had a great season, but, I mean, if you look at the numbers that RG3 put up, they're ridiculous.
Right.
I think he only threw 6 interceptions this year. He rushed for almost 700 yards.
If he hadn't have gotten hurt, he would have shattered records.
Yeah.
He would have shattered records.
And he did break records. He broke the rookie rushing record for a quarterback. I think he was like fourth in the NFL or something like that.
Now, let's talk about something.
With QBR.
All right. So you like the way that the rookie of the year voting came out?
Yeah, I'm okay.
So do
with
I.
It.
I don't have a problem with it. I guess if you live in Seattle or if you're, you know, on the West Coast, maybe you got a problem with
it. Well,
I don't think anybody else does.
There's definitely a case to be had for Russell Wilson.
Absolutely.
I just think that the more consistent over the 16, although he only played 15, over the 16 game season, RG3 was more consistent in those numbers. That's not taking anything away from Russell Wilson.
You know what's amazing to me? Look at the difference in the quality of the upcoming rookies next year. Well, who's the best quarterback coming out? Your guy at West Virginia?
Probably Geno Smith, maybe E.J. Manuel.
Well, it's not the guy at Southern Cal everybody thought it was.
Yeah.
He may not get drafted
Landry
until
Jones.
The third or fourth round.
Yeah, Landry Jones out of
Landry
Oklahoma,
Jones,
right?
To me, his feet are just slow.
Yeah. That,
you know, he throws, what, 50, 60 passes a game? You know, he's okay, but I watched him play. I didn't really like him.
There's no big name quarterback really coming out this year, whereas last year they had two. You had RG3 and you had Andrew Luck both coming out who were these big name, we're going to change the game kind of guys.
Right.
This class doesn't really have that. That doesn't mean that they're not going to be great quarterbacks. Look at Russell Wilson taking in, what, the fifth round, and he turned out to be the number two rookie of the year in any other year, the rookie of the year standalone. So I'm not ready to say that Geno
Was there
Smith,
another running back or a defensive player that you
Doug
can
Martin?
Think of? You know who might have gotten some votes? Your linebacker, Bruce, whatever his name is, from
Bruce
Seattle.
Irvin. Yeah, the outside.
He had like, what, 11 sacks?
He didn't get it.
Nine and a half sacks, something like that.
The defensive rookie of the year was like Luke something.
Luke, okay, the guy from, I know who you're talking about.
I don't know.
He's from Ohio State.
I don't know his last name.
No, is it Kuechly? Kuechly?
It's something I don't even want to try to
All right, let's talk about the ball game. San Francisco is -4.
Yeah.
The total is anywhere from 47, 47 and a half.
That's what I have at 47.
It's the biggest game of the year. You know, I'm happy that I have a team in. I'm happy you have a team in.
I would say we weren't in it. I have an invested interest.
Hey, listen, Houston wet the bed. You know, they wet the bed late. That was who I had going in. And they also really missed some defensive guys they lost in free agency. That was Houston's problem, in my opinion. Now, Baltimore, to me, right now, is the hotter of the two teams.
Yeah.
Anytime you have a guy going into New England, beating Tom Brady, Belichick, and the Pats, like you do with Flacco, and his defense and his offense, especially his receiving core, I think he'd have to have an off game here not to be in the game. I don't see San Francisco any way they dominate, because I think whatever the 49ers throw at them early, the Baltimore will be able to answer. That's why I'm leaning towards the over. One of the things that's got me off the over is that the numbers are just tremendous nationwide on the over money. And you know what? I'm still one of those conspiracy theorists. If everybody's betting one way, there's not really a bad move going the other way. But everybody's also on San Francisco. Why not take the points? Taking 4 points is a great play. A 1 point win, a 2 point win, a 3 point win, you win.
Yeah, and something we've talked about is when two brothers are playing each other,
uh-huh,
we know it's most likely not going to be a blowout. The other one doesn't want to embarrass their brother on national television.
Hey, we're going to be back in a minute with more. This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on AM 1230 WFAS.
Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS. And the picture's now up, okay? So if you want to see how Rob Gronkowski likes to party, it now is up at SportsManCave.com.
We got Russ Baxter on the line, pretty sure. Russell, is that you?
Either that or a reasonable facsimile.
Hey, listen, it's great to have you. Are you in New Orleans?
No, I am not.
Well, you're like me. You would rather stay in the safe confines. If you were in New Orleans and I was in New Orleans, it may be a problem.
Listen, I've been to 21 Super Bowls, and I've been to a couple in New Orleans. So
it's so much fun, isn't it?
Yeah. I've decided to do something different this year, but I'm actually down in the D.C. area with some friends and colleagues and all that.
Russell, you're here.
Yeah.
You're here. Are you in Northern Virginia or suburban Maryland?
I'm near Centerville.
Hey, that's
you know you're 20 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you when we get off the air and I get in my car headed towards you, we'll have to grab a drink somewhere. Hey, listen, let me ask you a question.
By the way, check your porch. I've been around.
Hey, my wife's probably still in bed.
Stomp out the flaming bag.
I coached my high school wrestling team to a second place. It's really a loss. We thought we were going to win the district this year. So, and I apologize for my voice, but Clark Judge didn't have any problem understanding me, and thank God you won't either. Listen,
I've always wanted to do a radio show with Brenda Vaccaro.
Hey, let me tell you something.
He's on today.
People think I smoke. I've never smoked. I'm allergic to tobacco. And even when I'm healthy, Bruce. Russ, you know, my voice kind of has a certain...
Je ne sais toi?
Whatever it is.
to keep with the new one.
You know what's really weird about that? People think that that's sexy, so I'm not. I don't have a problem with it. Hey, listen, let me...
Wait a minute, what number did I dial? Oh, my God.
You dialed one of those 1-900 numbers. Russ, let me ask you a question, first of all. Hall of Fame voting, did you like the outcome?
Yeah, I did like the outcome. I think we were long overdue to get two particular people in. It was Chris Carter and Coach Parcells. And I think people were a little surprised at Michael Strahan. Such a strong modern-day class with first-timers, with Jonathan Ogden and Larry Allen and Michael Strahan and Warren Sapp. I mean, that's tough. And three of those guys got in. And then, of course, you have the veteran committee guys, Dave Robinson and Curly Culp. Yeah, I mean, I like classes that epitomize all facets of the game, the offense, defense, coaching. And, it's pretty star-studded. And, you know, the shame with the Hall of Fame, and it's not, I shouldn't say shame because it makes it sound like it's a criticism. They have a limited number that goes in every time.
Right. Is it seven? You know, is seven the max?
Seven's the max, including the Veterans Committee guys.
They probably figured out what the number needs to be to get the right guys in. So that's a good number.
They jostled the number. The number is, you know, it used to be a six, and I think there were other numbers as well. And, you know, when the Hall celebrates its 50th anniversary this coming year, so people who have never been to the Hall, and I've been there about 20-plus times, and it's a great 4 days. It's a week-long celebration. I usually go for the back of the 4 days, and it's actually changed over the years. You know, when I first started going in 1989, you had the ceremony and the game on the same day, on Saturday. The ceremony took place on the Hall of Fame steps.
Right.
And then the stadium is right next door, and you walked over it, and the game was at like 2:30 in the afternoon. Now, of course, it's all different. It's all spread out and so on. But it's a great weekend. I don't know if you've ever been or any of you guys have ever been.
Mm-hmm. Almost went to Art Monk's. Almost.
Certainly worthwhile to get there. Certainly worthwhile to be there. And even if it's not Hall of Fame week, it's certainly a good road trip.
Yeah.
You know, and they do have the football game. And you know what? They have it. Is that in August?
Yeah, it's the night after. It's the first weekend
right
in August, yes.
That, you know what it is? You know, we're talking about the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. I'm talking to Russell Baxter, who's a football guru. And if you ever want to follow him on Twitter, like everybody I know does, at Bax, B-A-X, football guru, G-U-R-U. Russell Baxter, one of the greatest guys that you can read, one of the greatest guys to talk to. Russell, thank you so much for coming on the biggest day of my year, because really it's all over today. It's the last chapter in what I consider a 26 to 30 chapter book called the NFL season. And, you know, that's what I look at as a handicapper and as a fan. I look at the NFL season as just one chapter right after another. And, you know, it's been a great year when you look at it. What a great quarterback group of rookies we had.
We had the rookie quarterbacks. We had the compelling comeback story.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, two, for lack of a better word, new teams in the Super Bowl. You know, and once again, for the ninth year in a row, the team with the best record in the NFL isn't going to win the Super Bowl. You know, and these are the things that people enjoy about the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the last time the Ravens were in the Super Bowl, okay?
I was there.
It was 12 years ago,
yep.
And amongst other things, the Houston Texans weren't even in business yet.
Yeah.
Okay, now think about the last time the 49ers were in the Super Bowl.
Going even further back.
The Ravens didn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in Miami, and I spent like a day or two with food poisoning there. It was, but it was a great game if you like to see a lot of offense. That was Bobby Ross. That was Bobby Bethard. And that was 28 free agents with San Diego against a brutal San Francisco team that just ran it up.
And there's no guy named Manning,
no,
Roethlisberger, or Brady in this game.
Hey, Russ,
so that's
let me ask you a question. Sure. You know all the guys. I talked to Clark about it. Who are the guys that you thought didn't get in that you would like to have seen get a few more votes at HOF?
Well, I don't know. It's always tough because I think eventually the guys are going to get in. I mean, the Andre Reeds and the Jerome Bettises,
yeah,
and the Tim Browns and Michael Strahan. And, you know, there's three guys who have kind of faded from view that all played for the Oakland Raiders that I'm surprised, and probably in this order, Ray Guy.
I agree.
Cliff Branch, who I thought was a dynamite receiver and a big-time receiver in the playoffs. And I think Ken Stabler, too, warrants some votes for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And those are, you know, those Oakland teams, I know they only won the one Super Bowl in the 70s, and then the wild card team with Plunkett won it in the 80s. But, I mean, Art Shell, Gene Upshaw, Fred Blitnikoff, Jim Otto, they're all in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Boy, they...
John Madden's in the Hall of Fame, yep, as well. You know, that's, you know, the thing about the 70s was, for lack of a better word, not to disparage anybody, there were really six solid football teams. In the AFC, it was Miami, Pittsburgh, and Oakland.
That's right.
In the NFC, it was Dallas, the Rams, and the Vikings.
Right.
And Washington was solid but didn't make the playoffs all the time. But, you know, the Steelers are in the playoffs 8 years in a row. The Rams won seven straight division titles. The Vikings were in the Super Bowl almost every year.
Right.
And if they weren't in, the Cowboys weren't in. So, I mean, it was – those were different times. Although it's funny, this is the first time – in 10 years, in the AFC, that either New England, Pittsburgh, or Indy is not representing the AFC in the Super Bowl.
And you know what? I'm so happy of that, especially the Patriots.
Even happier than you are.
you know what's great? Russ, you're going to stay on the line for me, aren't you? And we're going to...
What time's the game? Like 6:25?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to...
Yeah, okay, we can do that.
I'm going to take...
Sure.
Hey, Russ, I'm going to come down. I'm going to buy you lunch. You're going to call me on my cell. And then I'm going to take a four-hour nap after we eat lunch because I'm exhausted. Hey, listen, for the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect homeownership. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back in a minute with Russ Baxter, Roy Edwards, my man Matt, on AM 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS here with Russell Baxter. You can follow him on Twitter at BaxFootballGuru. We're talking some Hall of Fame and some Super Bowl action.
Boy, he's got a lot of followers. Hey, Russ, you can throw a few of those my way anytime you want. Actually, I'm pretty picky, but you know, Russell, you do, what's the name of your show you do every week?
The show I do every week.
Well, I was just looking on you just got off, I think you were on a show earlier today.
Oh, I do. There's probably about six or seven spots that I do every week. With various stations and podcasts across the country. I've been a regular on Patriots.com radio.
Right. Got to be careful what I say about those guys.
Well, I write everything down. So. but John Rook, I've been doing something with John Rook for about 12 years on the Patriots.com radio station.
Right.
And just started doing some regular stuff with NBC Sports Radio. I do stuff with Mark Vandermeer down with the Texans radio station. Stuff with Trib Live Radio out in Pittsburgh with Ken Laird.
Right.
I'm eternally grateful that many people want to talk to me about football, and because I love it so much, I consider it truly an ideal opportunity to just do something you love.
That's super. Let's talk Super Bowl here. Let's talk Super Bowl. Rodney Dangerfield's trying to get in the house, and I can't do anything about it. Let's talk Super Bowl. You know, early on, I picked San Francisco to win it all before the season started. And that was a logical pick. They didn't really lose much. They had everybody signed. Then mid-season, Alex Smith gets banged on the head pretty good from behind, and they got a new quarterback. He doesn't look great right away, but you can see why they picked him in the draft. And you can see that that was probably Jimmy Harbaugh's thought all along, because it wasn't like Alex Smith was an automatic guy all the time. Even though I'm an Alex Smith fan, I think he's made the right choice with Cap. What do you think?
Well, I also had San Francisco winning the Super Bowl before the season, and I had them defeating the Baltimore Ravens before the season started. And, of course, I also predicted that Kaepernick would get the job in November. I also predicted that Ray Lewis would get injured in the middle of the season. I also predicted that the Ravens would lose four of their last five games. My point is this. When you hit the ball in the woods and it bounces out to the fairway, it's still a one on the scorecard.
That's absolutely true.
Okay? And trust me, I speak from experience.
Yeah, me too. Do you play golf?
Again, reasonable facts.
I don't play the same game those guys do that are playing out in Phoenix right now.
I don't play with the same balls because I usually lose mine somewhere in the woods or even in the fair. I think I've lost a few in the fairway. But I'll go back to your point about the game. You know, I was kind of leery when he made the final decision as well. But this is Kaepernick. This is he's Kaepernick's guy and vice versa. I mean, he's the one who brought him in. Mm-hmm. He's the one that made the decision. You know, at the beginning of the year, I based my pick on, you know, Alex Smith being the quarterback, but more so I based it on a very, very good defense and the mentality of the running game, which is the thing I like the most about the San Francisco 49ers. I'm kind of an old school guy. I like balance. I don't believe you win quarterbacks, Super Bowls with just quarterbacks. You have to win with the whole package, and it just continues to bear it out. We see these astronomical numbers getting put up by quarterbacks, and yesterday it didn't even result in an MVP.
Yeah.
Okay, it was a running back that wound up winning the MVP.
That's right.
There's a lot to be said for balance in this league. And I'll tell you what sticks out to me about the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, which ought to tell you something about Jim Harbaugh's mentality. That was a team that was down 17-0 in the second quarter. By game's end, they only ran 51 offensive plays. Okay, so down 7, think about that, 17-0, not a lot of offensive plays, okay,
and
obviously having to come from behind. They ran the ball 29 times and dropped back 22 times.
Yeah.
Ran for 149 yards, so they never wavered from their game plan regardless of how far down they were. The week before, Colin Kaepernick ran for 181 yards. He ran for only 21 yards on two carries in the game against Atlanta. One was a 23-yard run. The other was a 2-yard loss. So, I mean, they did a dynamite job controlling that line of scrimmage. And for people who are also looking at Flacco as carrying the team, he's not carrying the team.
No,
he is benefiting from their running game. And that's how it should be. This isn't handball or bowling or tennis.
These are the two best teams in the league right now.
They are playing. And here's the thing that'll surprise people about Joe Flacco, I think. He's thrown 8 touchdown passes. He's thrown 0 interceptions in these 3 playoff games.
Yeah, that's the key.
Want to take a stab at what his completion percentage is in the playoffs?
It's probably 70.7%.
Roy?
I would say 61.
Less than 55.
Huh. Is that right? I thought he was all over it. But
why is he able to do that?
It's all the deep.
Because they run the ball.
The ball for a 148.7 a game. The wild card game, Bernard Pierce gets over 100. The divisional playoffs, Ray Rice gets over 100. It's a back and forth game. You don't abandon. I mean, don't people get in trouble abandoning the run game in the second quarter? I understand abandoning a run game in the fourth quarter.
Right.
But teams, and that skews some of the numbers as well. So you have two teams that run the ball. They're persistent in doing it. They have big play quarterbacks. There are some scary similarities between the Baltimore Ravens and San Francisco 49ers, and why I contend that the Harbaughs are not just brothers, but they're actually twins.
No, not only that, They got the old man's DNA. I mean, the greatest thing about these two teams, both guys have been special teams coaches at different levels, all levels. Both guys have been offensive guys at different levels. And both guys have very good defensive people working with their teams. I mean, you look at the San Francisco Giants. That is the best defense, in my opinion, in the NFL. But the Ravens have come on really well. Now, they use more people than San Francisco on their defensive side of the ball, but they get the same results. The difference in this game, in my opinion, Russ, is going to be special teams. And that's where the Ravens have the edge, in my opinion.
Jacoby Jones is a big play threat, as we know. You also have 49ers not great at covering kicks.
Right.
They've also had a place kicker who inexplicable slump for most of the season. Remember, he kicked a 63-yarder to tie the NFL record in week one.
Right.
And I don't want to say it's been all downhill ever since, but it's been more wide left ever since, more wide right ever since.
And when you're bringing in, you know, Billy Cundiff come the playoffs,
that's
and
not a good
some
sign.
Questions in the kicking game.
It's not
but let me ask you this, Roy. Could you imagine if they did keep Cundiff for the Super Bowl?
Oh, I know.
Think about that storyline, kicking against the Ravens.
Yeah.
After what happened with him last year. But I want to go back to how similar these teams are just for 1 second, because I want you two guys to explain these numbers.
Okay.
Now, remember, it's the Harbaugh brothers,
this
right?
is great. They're probably identical.
Okay. The Ravens during the regular – I'm going to give you regular season numbers for the most part.
Okay.
Points scored, Ravens, 398.
Yep.
49ers, 397.
Yep.
Takeaways, 25 for the Ravens, 25 for the 49ers.
Perfect.
Turnovers, 16 for the Ravens, 16 for the 49ers.
It's
turnover differential obviously is the same.
Yeah.
Both teams trailed at the half in the championship game. Both teams scored exactly 28 points in their championship games. They're twins, I'm telling you, they're twins.
You know what?
Pretty well.
They probably are. And I'm going to tell you that the greatest – now, I've never met Jim Harbaugh. I have met and talked to – I mean, Jim Harbaugh. I have met and talked to John – you'll never meet a nicer guy in your life. He stood and talked to me for 15, 20 minutes outside a concert in D.C., and nobody even knew who he was. He's not a big guy. He's not a real tall guy like Jimmy is. And just the nicest guy in the world, asked for some information about some tickets, did all this stuff. The thing I like the most about the Harbaughs is their work ethic. These guys live, eat, and talk football.
Well, you alluded to something that I thought was very profound, because you talked about their coaching history. These are football coaches.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These are not offensive coaches. These are not defensive coaches. This is not an offensive specialist.
Yeah.
Okay? These are both football coaches. And this game is one with all three phases of the game. It can't be ignored, okay? You can't ignore the facts, and you can't ignore that it takes – there are so many different ways to weigh a football game. I think that's one of the appeals about football. You can have a terrible offensive day and still win a football game. You can have a terrible defensive day and still win a football game.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a bad special teams day like the Ravens did in Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, how many teams give up a punt and a kickoff in the same game for touchdowns and still win the game?
That was one of the most amazing games I've ever seen. I don't even think I've ever seen that, Russell. Have you?
Maybe at the college level, but not at the pro level.
Well, you know, it's funny. The very first game that Jim Harbaugh coached, okay, for the 49ers,
right?
They played the Seattle Seahawks, and the game was kind of close. And Ted Ginn, I believe, both in the fourth quarter, had a punt return and a kickoff return for touchdowns.
Oh, that was when he made All-Pro that year.
The very first game Jim Harbaugh coached for the 49ers, week one of 2011. I mean, I've seen guys who have returned two punts for touchdowns in the same game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you know, Devin Hester, you know, his first 2 years in the league, he was doing it every other week and stuff. But, I mean, the similarities between these teams are tremendous. And I think what makes it so intriguing is, even though they have good defensive reputations, we've seen people move the ball on the San Francisco 49ers last 5 or 6 games. And the Ravens, who said, by the way, who set a team record, not the kind they want to set, they set a team record for rushing yards allowed in the season this year. They're even giving up more rushing yards per game in the playoffs than they were in the regular season. And yet they've done something very impressive, and you see – teams do this, like the Saints in 09 and the Packers in 2010.
Belichick.
You get on a roll with the takeaways. And in these playoffs, the Baltimore Ravens, who we just mentioned, they only had 25 takeaways during the regular season. They have 8 in the 3 playoff games.
Right.
And how crucial do you think these are? 7 of them have come at the expense of the 3 starting quarterbacks they played against.
That's right.
Andrew Luck had a fumble and an interception. Peyton Manning had 2 interceptions and a lost fumble, and they picked off Brady twice. And by the way, we know what the 8th turnover was. Just ask Stephen Ridley and Bernard Pollard. I mean,
yeah.
this is a savvy Baltimore defense.
Yeah, that was a payback.
Savvy Baltimore defense. Well,
I think you and I were going back and forth on Twitter on that. They really made a horrible call, the Zebras did earlier in that game, on a hit across the middle, and that was on Pollard, and it was a shoulder tackle, and he didn't even hit the guy that hard. Flag comes out of nowhere. I knew at that point that they were going to hit somebody and knock him out of the game, and they did.
Well, see, I think what happens sometimes with those hits is they are penalizing, they are looking at the impact rather than the hit, if
right.
that makes sense.
Yeah.
A head jerking back, a guy going limp. All those different type of things. And sometimes it's so startling that their first inclination is, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think they're working hard to get better at it and stuff, but it's tough because human nature kind of dictates. I'm not saying it's right.
No.
Go back to Bernard Pollard, who, by the way, I'm sure the New England Patriots would love to get him banned from Gillette Stadium.
Yeah.
Okay, between that hit, and we know what happened with Tom Brady 4 years ago when he was with the Chiefs.
That's what he does.
But I'll tell you something. He's one of those guys in this league.
You got to have him.
Well, you got to have him, and I'll tell you what else he's done. And other players are learning to do it. He's learned to play this new style NFL and stay within the rules.
Yeah, he really has.
Hey, Russell, I appreciate everything. Can you stay? Do you want to? Could you stay on with us?
Oh yeah, because I got to get my.
Yeah, we got to pick. Stay on. Hang on for a couple of minutes.
Okay?
We're going to come back and talk. We're going to talk some stats about this game. We're going to talk about some just strong feelings about this Super Bowl. We got Russell Baxter on the line, and we'll be back in a minute on AM 1230 WFAS.
Voyage was a hard one on Atlantic's icy waves. Free passage on a coffin ship, the landlord's useless slaves.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. We still have Russell Baxter here. You can follow him at Bax Football Guru. We're talking Super Bowl, and Russell, we have to get your Super Bowl picks. So thanks for hanging on.
Absolutely, Russell. This is the big time.
I have to see this through, and the pick. You know, got very lucky. With the preseason pick. And I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to go 49ers 28, Ravens 26. There's been a tendency in these Super Bowls as of late to be close games,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it's be an exception. By the way, 9 of the last 15 Super Bowls decided by 7 points or less.
That's right.
Okay, now I bring that up because amazingly, and we had that run of blowouts in the Super Bowl for a long time, only 7 of the first 31 Super Bowls were decided by 7 points or less. So it's an awful big swing, and it's really kind of – once free agency settled in.
Pete Rozelle.
Okay. Once it's settled in, and, this 9 of 15 started with the Broncos' upset of the Packers in Super Bowl 32.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of been ever since. And we said, we saw Tampa blow out the Raiders. We saw the Saints kind of turn a close game into a 2-touchdown game against the Colts. But – we've seen Plexico Burris and David Tyree and Santonio Holmes and Vinatieri field goals. We've seen a lot of good stuff. And my MVP in this game is actually going to be Frank Gore, not a quarterback.
Yeah.
But I think the first quarter of this game to me will be won by the jitters. Okay? I alluded to the fact that these teams haven't been to the Super Bowl in a while, which means – there's not a lot of the Super Bowl experience on the field. And if you think this really is another game, then you've never been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I think, and it has nothing to do with the quarterbacks being young, because they're both young.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the teams in general. People, they're going to be nervous.
Yep.
I've seen veteran teams come into the Super Bowl and be nervous. I've seen veteran players come in here and it become a tough state. You know, one of the best Super Bowls was an odd Super Bowl between New England and Carolina.
Right.
Which was...
that was a great game. Carolina.
It was a great game. It was stagnant for basically the whole first half.
That's because the defenses were banging, and then the second half they were so exhausted, nobody could tackle anybody.
Right. And then you got to the third quarter, and it was a little stagnant again. And then all of a sudden, the fourth quarter... People forget Carolina had the lead.
Yeah.
They scored too quick, Russ. Remember?
Yeah. Well,
they really did. They left too much time on the clock.
Yeah, but Bruce, I will say this. Even though I semi-agree with that, they also had the place kicker kick the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's right.
And give the ball.
That was unbelievable. You know what? That was one of the best Super Bowls. That was in Houston.
That was Brady's first, right?
That was in Houston. And I'll tell you another thing about that game, Russell, and you'll appreciate this. Because you're not only, you know, a media guy, you're a fan. If you go to a Super Bowl, you take a bus to the stadium and back in your package, because I had about 150 people there, most of them Carolina fans that had never been. That was the only time in the history of Super Bowls I've been to, and like you, I've been to a bunch, where the bus never stopped from the hotel till when it parked at the stadium, and when it left the stadium, it never stopped until it got back to the hotel. The daggone traffic handling in Houston was unbelievable. Plus, that lot they used was enormous. But I got to tell you.
Wait a minute. Who was driving your bus? Sandra Bullock?
Yeah. good
I can't remember the bus driver, but it was a good guy. No. It was just the way that they handled the logistics of the traffic.
There's a bomb on the bus.
They had cops everywhere. They had highway.
I hear everything. Don't worry.
Hey, listen. You know that game. That was a very good game. But getting back to this game,
you know, by the way, features still the longest touchdown pass or the longest pass in the history of the Super Bowl.
Now was that to the little guy?
Jake DeLome to Musa Muhammad for
85 yards.
Mm.
That's right.
Okay, try that on. In fact, I'll tell you something else to look forward to and interesting. Keep an eye on anybody in this game who wasn't drafted.
You know, you're not going
to
like
your rosters, and I'll tell you why. There's a little interesting bit of trivia, for lack of a better word. The most passing yards in a game by a quarterback is Kurt Warner. In fact, Kurt Warner has the top three performances in the history of the Super Bowl in terms of passing yards in a game.
I know one it wasn't. It wasn't the one where New England won. Was it?
No.
In New Orleans?
The 414 yards for the record he got in the game that he won.
Against Tennessee.
The other performances were against Pittsburgh when he was with the Cardinals and then the New England game.
Right.
But my point is he is the top three passing performances in terms of yards, and he was undrafted, as we all know.
Yeah, he was playing in the Arena League,
right?
And he was also a grocery clerk, right?
Right. The longest run in the history of Super Bowl was Willie Parker against the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, he did. Nobody touched him, did they?
Right. He's also undrafted.
That's right. Hey, the Redskins had him for a week.
Right. Jake DeLome threw the longest pass in the history of the Super Bowl, as we just mentioned. Undrafted.
Do you know Del Homie's do you know Del Homie? That's what I call him. His story. He was on the practice squad in 2002 when New England was a 13-point underdog, and they beat on a field goal by Adam Vinatieri at the end of the game. They beat, and their defense beat the Rams.
Wow.
And
their defense and special teams won that Super Bowl.
Yes, they did.
And, by the way,
that was the easiest bet I ever made. Right there.
The longest play in the history of the Super Bowl, obviously everybody knows, is James Harrison, 100-yard interception return.
I thought he was going the wrong way at first.
Well, but guess what? He's also undrafted.
That's more amazing than anything. Where did he come from? Small college somewhere?
Kent State.
God, unbelievable.
Kent State. I seem to recall a pretty good linebacker that came from Kent State.
Yeah, wasn't that the guy that played for – didn't he also play for the Steelers?
Jack Lambert.
Yep. With no Tifas?
But my point is, so the most passing yards, the longest run, the longest pass, and the longest play in Super Bowl history
all
came from players who were not drafted.
Russell Baxter, ladies and gentlemen, he's the football guru, pro football guru. Russell, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Don't leave yet, but as soon as we're done here, we got another segment coming in, and we got a guy coming on. I really appreciate you calling in. Now, listen, you still haven't given me your pick.
No, he did. He said 26.
Oh, yeah, you,
right?
Oh, you picked 26. The... So you
were
like?
So
I wrote it down.
And you?
You're still so excited about covering with the Patriots Rams Super Bowl?
I'm excited about meeting you in Centerville.
I'm going to be detained. Not that we'll have to do that another time.
Okay.
Okay.
You're detained?
No. Well, I've got for questioning. Yeah,
I got stuff to do.
Oh, you're gonna be. What you're saying is you're not going out in that cold weather.
I got this thing.
How do you like our inch of snow that stopped everything?
Oh wait. Oh. I was actually out last night. It was kind of. But I live in Connecticut. Mm. Okay, so
this is nothing to you.
But I've also been in Manhattan when a snowstorm happened, and it's similar. Okay, it's similar to everything kind of shuts down when there's, just when it starts and so
on. A lot of people here in D.C. aren't from here. They're from other places where they don't get snow. Russell, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, that was Russell Baxter, people, picking 28-26.
28-26.
Who did he pick to win?
He's 49ers. He stuck with his
Thank
with
God.
Gut.
Well, he also took the points, so he's got the Ravens to cover. That's what you got.
That's what I have.
That's you. Russ, thanks so much, buddy. Hey, he's the man.
Yeah.
Russell Baxter is the man.
Make sure you give him a follow on the tweet box. He is Bax Football Guru on Twitter. Great follow. Great guy. Knows a lot about football, writes for a billion different places.
Roy, who's going to make the biggest impact today for your winning Baltimore Ravens?
Well,
you don't think they're going to win. You just think they're going to cover.
Yeah, I have the 49ers winning with Ravens covers. But, and my guy, my eyes lit up when he mentioned Frank Gore. Because Frank Gore, to me, is the key to this game. I had Jarrett Brown, who is a former quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, played there for 2 years. He also played at WVU. I had him on a show with me earlier in the week, and he had nothing but great things to say about Frank Gore. He talked about what sets Frank Gore apart from all the other running backs is his IQ and how smart he is, how he knows all of the blitz pickups, how he can read a defense, and how he gets himself in the right places to be, which – to me, opens up lanes for Kaepernick.
He also picks up blitzing really well.
Right. He's
a Miami. He's a University of Miami guy. Maybe one of the most stand-up guys in the history of the University of Miami football programs. And I'm going to tell you what I like about Frank Gore. If you look at his body, it's not a great body. He doesn't even have – you can tell he's carrying around 10 extra pounds. But he's got great wiggle, great instincts on – when to cut, when not to cut, when to just take as many as he can get and dive into somebody's legs. He knows. Roy, for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion on Super Bowl Sunday. I'm here with Roy Edwards. I got Matt on the box. We'll be back in a minute on AM 1230 WFAS.
High on a hill, it calls to me to.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on AM 1230 WFAS, Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
Yes, we are.
Thanks to our guests for coming on today, Judge and Russell, the football guru, Baxter.
One of the best shows ever. One of the best
Great
shows
day.
Ever.
Yeah.
We were hoping to get a Baltimore Raven guy in, but he was in a car, and we kind of kept going back and forth with him. Couldn't get him on. It was just a bad connection. But you know what? I'm going to tell you what I like. I like San Francisco winning the game. I like the Ravens covering 4. If it goes to 4.5, it's definitely a Ravens cover. I think it's going to be a 1 or 2 point game. I totally agree with Russ because they're twins, Russ said. Was it Russ? Russ said that. They're not brothers. They're twins. Those numbers were staggering. What it showed me is that both teams don't need to throw the ball to be successful. They can run the ball too. A lot of teams in the NFL, New Orleans comes to mind first, several teams, Detroit.
Yeah.
They get 5,000 yards, but they get what rushing the ball? Nothing.
Yeah.
You know, 1,500? Not even that.
You look at the Saints running backs over the past couple of years, and the names are changing.
And they've got good running. And they've got good running backs.
They have good running
tandems. They don't utilize them.
And Detroit doesn't really have a running back either. I mean, they had, what's his name? I had him on my fantasy team. I don't even remember his name, but they had Bell and
they have like three guys.
The guy's name is. But that's,
oh, yeah, it was the guy that got hurt.
Yeah.
From University of California. That's great. I know who he is. I see him, and I can't think of his name. I'm sitting here sending Mike Wise a direct message. I'm going to try to get Wise to come on before we leave the show. But right now, that's my play. I think the difference with Baltimore, I think what's going to keep Baltimore close is their special teams. Now, listen. I'm going to get real bold here. I'm going to say LaMichael James, the backup running back, to Frank Gore for the Niners, the scat back or whatever you want to call him out of the University of Oregon, who can fly and who does a pretty good job of picking up blitzes, and he catches the ball out of the backfield. I think LaMichael James is going to be the difference in the game. Don't think it's Gore. I think Patrick Willis is going to be the MVP. I think Patrick Willis makes 20 tackles today. The key is going to be keeping the San Francisco linebackers free to roam and attack the football. Because if that D-line for the San Francisco 49ers can stand up the offensive line, which has done a great job. Now, you got to remember, the Ravens' offensive line is a rebuilt line. Mm-hmm. They ended up putting, McKinnon or whatever his name is from Minnesota. They ended up putting him at left tackle and moving Michael Orr over to right side. And they got the three interior guys, or Burke and a couple of other guys. They played phenomenal. And they've made the biggest difference. The last five games, the Ravens running backs have 750 yards rushing. That's 150 yards a game in five games in a row. I don't see that changing much, but I don't see them getting 150 yards rushing against that defense for the 49ers. Do you?
I do. Actually,
really?
Yeah, I think that both teams rush for over 100 yards today.
Well, no, but I'm talking about 150 or more.
Yeah, I think the Ravens do. I think the Ravens could run for 150 yards today. The big key to the Ravens running game, now they've established it. They stuck with it with the change of offensive coordinators. Count the number of times today that the Baltimore Ravens rush the ball on first down. It's almost every single time that these guys put the ball in Ray Rice's hands, first play of a series, first play of a set of downs. And it's that consistency that carries throughout the game that's going to get them that 150-yard mark. Plus, you look at Jacoby Jones and you look at Smith on the other side,
right,
stretching the field. That's going to open it up for Ray Rice to do even more damage. I think that's a big key, is the deep ball and the rush game for the Baltimore Ravens today.
I think the key is going to be the Ravens front seven. Because I think if the Ravens front seven can kind of go even with the offensive line for San Francisco, that's what's going to give the Ravens the chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
Also, their special teams. If they can cover their kicks like they usually do, right? And if they can get a big play or two out of their return game, the Ravens can win this game. That's what they have to do to win. I think San Francisco, if you look at them, and look at the Ravens' offense and defense, they are the better team. But I think special teams, which mean everything to the Harbaugh boys, they do. They've both been special teams coaches in the NFL, both of them. College, in the NFL, everywhere. I think Johnny and Jimmy know how important that is. I wouldn't be a bit surprised in this game, Roy, to see an onside kick early in the game. I really think they might do it. Because think about this for a second. Can you imagine, let's say it's a late score, and there's 30 seconds left in the game, or in the half.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, there's an onside kick, or maybe a minute left. And you recover, and you don't give the ball back to the other team, and you go and kick another field goal. That could be the difference in a ball game. I think the gloves are coming off. You know I'm a conspiracy theorist,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do know that.
Okay. Johnny already beat Jim. We talked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
On Thanksgiving Day last year, they traveled. The 49ers did. To Baltimore. You know, maybe it was this year. It was actually last year, but it was this season. They traveled to Baltimore after a Sunday night game where they won and played a Thanksgiving night game in Baltimore. Short week, tough as hell, 16-6, dominant, not terribly dominant, but pretty dominant Raven win. They're brothers. They're twins. Whose turn is it? Jimmy. Why? Because it is. What do you think the parents are rooting for? They don't want Johnny to be up 2-0. They would like to see if they – I bet you they're rooting for Jimmy. And I'll tell you why. Then the next time these guys get together, and these two teams, which have been put together in a phenomenal way by two great general managers, two great organizations, okay, these two teams are going to be back next year. There's no way. You think Colin Kaepernick's going to be worse next year out of the pistol? Hell no, he's going to be better. Mm-hmm. Who's going to beat them? Seattle? Nope. Seattle had their chance this year. I think they go back. I think Seattle probably goes back in the West. I think the West is the team to beat. The East isn't. Giants aren't going back. They look like they got too many holes. Redskins could be the team. Dallas, no. Philly, no. Right? Look at the North Division. Minnesota, lucky this year. Easy schedule. Green Bay, probably back. Right? Mm-hmm. Chicago, maybe. I'm telling you, the West is the division in the NFC right now. So they're coming back. Are the Ravens going to get worse? No. Are they going to get better? Yes.
Well,
they actually get an extra draft pick or two this year.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Ravens after this season.
Well, they're going to sign. Even if they don't sign Flacco, even if they give him the franchise tag, he makes $15 million.
Well, yeah, you franchise tag him, and then you lose the franchise tag to put on Ed Reed, who may or may not retire at the end of the season. There's been reports that Ed Reed...
I think Ed Reed's going to work out a deal.
Well...
No, he's going to work it out. I don't think he really
needs... He wants a lot of money.
Yeah, but he's too old to get a lot of money. Well, he's a safety. He's not a quarterback.
And they were talking about what happened, what was brought up during the Super Bowl week media day and everything like that was the possibility of Ed Reed going to the Patriots. Now, a lot of Baltimore Ravens fans don't want to hear this, but Ed Reed came out and said that he would play for Belichick and he think it would be a great learning experience and all this
stuff. Yeah, if he wants to be a coach, maybe.
Now, do I think he goes to the Patriots? No. I think he either retires or he works out something to do with Baltimore, but I just don't know if because tying up the franchise tag with Flacco really limits what you can do with your other positions. And that's something that needs to be addressed. There's going to be a lot. I mean, you saw what happened to the Baltimore Ravens this year. They lost a lot of guys in free agency. Now, I know that they are sitting here in the last game of the season, and that's all that really matters. But you can't lose guys to free agency every year and expect to be back here again.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that's why I think they'll work something out for him.
I really hope they do.
They may move some money around. They may give him a two-year deal and put some back-end money there for him. And, he may not come back for the second year, and they may guarantee it or something. They may figure out a way to do it, to absolutely do it. Well, I tried to get Mike Wise to call in. Evidently, he's doing something else. He's down at the Super Bowl. He's probably in the media station getting ready. Matt, I've never asked you this, but who do you like in the Super Bowl? Are you going to pick Baltimore because you live 15 minutes from there?
I'm going to outwardly pick Baltimore, but I want the San Francisco 49ers to win.
You don't want your neighbor to have an up on you?
No, he doesn't want anybody to pick up the papers because there's so many Sun papers outside. If they win, then maybe he won't be able to get a free paper anymore.
I came up during the Joe Montana, the Montana to Rice era, so that was always my second team, so... And I don't think Baltimore's a real team. I can't believe he said that.
God.
I can't root for anything that's purple. I just can't.
Oh, here's some news. The NFL and General Electric, $50 million partnership for concussion research.
That's good news.
You know, it's real good news because people are talking. There's a lot of serious talk going on right now about kids playing football. Should they be playing football?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? You got a young son.
Of course.
You're going to let him play football at an early age?
Yes, of course.
With a helmet?
Of course.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, look at yourself. You're 27. You have the brain of an 80-year-old.
I have a great memory, actually. But
my kid's going to be playing with leather helmets because I want him to be a little bit slower.
He just can't remember his headphones when he goes, when he's away from town.
I think one of the guys, I think he was on either ESPN or NFL Network, came out and he said, the people who come out and they say that I question my son playing football are the guys who don't know how to teach their son.
No,
I totally agree.
But you're not going to be coaching him. A lot of these guys won't
absolutely. I'll be coaching my son.
Welcome to my world. You won't have a life.
He said you wouldn't give your son a gun and not teach him how to use it. Why would you enroll him in football and not teach him how to play
it safe? Oh, now you're talking about gun control.
No, I'm saying that if you're going to expose him to something that could potentially hurt him, you have to teach him everything about it. So if you don't teach him, then
I agree. Real quick, football related, Torrey Smith wins the 2012 GMC Never Say Never moment of the year.
When his brother died. Yeah.
That's right. When he won the game with two touchdowns. Jonathan Ogden, another. I'm sitting here looking at Art Modell denied Hall of Fame entry. We were supposed to have Tony Mazur on. He would have gone on for an hour about why that was a good thing. It's been a great show. Yeah. We had Clark Judge on. Mm-hmm.
There's a chicken wing drought, so hopefully you guys have plenty of chicken wings at your parties.
All right, we'll be back next week. This was Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. For Roy Edwards, for Matt, the soccer guy, and Bruce Hall. We'll be back next week on AM 1230 WFAS.